Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's about that time now. About that time. Turn this thing on out. Now, let me see everybody do this. Hey, let's go!
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, weekend Friday.
Welcome to another episode of the Moncton Wildcast Podcast, live from Wildcast Studios, with your hosts, Adam Lund, Chris Thompson, and Jeremy Boucher.
Welcome back to another special episode of the Moncton Wildcast Podcast, presented by Roads to Sea Tours. Welcome to the first annual Maritime Division Podcast Roundtable. That's a lot to say. Live from somewhere in Quebec. No, it's live from the Delta Hotel in Quebec. There goes Boucher and his apple cider.
2 liters of Bumper Crop BC Craft Cider. Crisp apple. 7% alcohol. Available at your local Atlantic Superstore.
Well done. So that's Jeremy. He's on poutine number two. He's still behind one of the guys that I'm about to introduce here real quick.
I'm on Kraft's apple cider bottle number two as well.
Oh boy. We are joined by some very special guests. We got Jamie Tozer from Station Nation representing the Sea Dogs.
Great to be here. Thanks for coming over.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us in your hotel
room. Yeah. Aiden Northcutt, Director of Marketing and Communications for the Charlottetown Islanders.
What's going on?
I don't know. You?
Just doing a podcast, I guess. You know,
nothing really. Brian McPherson, Digital Media Coordinator from the Acadie Bathurst.
And one-time recipient of the Stick Tap of the Week.
Yes, that is very true.
So I had to throw that in there.
How are you?
Ryan's trying to get logged on to Wi-Fi. Just give him a few minutes.
All right. We'll get there. And then, of course, friend of the show. You've heard him here before. Play-by-play voice of the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles, Mr. Pat McNeil.
Thanks for having me.
Did you find that tie in like a Walmart kids section? I'm sorry.
Yes, for those that can't see, the tie is small.
It's literally only going down to like the middle of your chest.
Everyone knows belt buckles about the
I'm a small man, literally.
I'm very curious as to actually where you bought that.
I don't even remember. Don't ask. Are all the questions going to be this hard?
Well,
yes.
We'll say he bought it at the Walmart kids section, just for the fact.
Most of them
short
will.
Man. Like, I don't know, is Briar shorter than me? I'm not sure.
No, Briar's got like 8 inches on you.
I didn't realize that.
He may not be big, but he's wiry. He's still got some life to
him. I just grabbed the empty bottle. There you go. That's a full one.
You going to be all right over there?
Well, sir.
Yes. You've got some news to share there, Mr. McNeil, that the OHL fanboys.
Yes.
You just said
yes.
You were going to talk about
it before we got going.
Yeah, it was funny. Luckily, I can edit that out.
I was giving my Halifax Hurtcast tribute, but I wanted to give a shout out to the OHL fanboys, the podcast that I've heard on a few times, first OHL podcast that everyone listened to, first ever CHL podcast that everyone listened to. They did a great job. I was happy to be on their show, and sad to be losing one of the network of CHL podcasts. So kudos to Brian and Steve. You guys had a great one.
For sure. So I'm sure you guys are listening to the show. We're going to kick this off with a quick question for everyone. Who's the greatest athlete you've ever seen play live?
I'll start it off. Live, does it depend on age here?
No, just the greatest athlete.
Sidney Crosby for the Roscoe team.
Yeah, I was going to say Sidney Crosby with the Penguins.
You saw him live?
Yeah, I saw him in Edmonton.
You're an asshole. So.
Yeah, probably be mine.
Okay, I have two.
That's fine.
We'll only ask for one. No,
I'm going to give you two.
Okay, go ahead.
So mine was more firsthand. You said Sidney Crosby. I actually had the chance to skate with Sidney Crosby when he was with the Ruski. He was on the ice. Like, I was doing a hockey camp somewhere in Halifax, and he was on the ice before us. Came in the dressing room, signed some autographs. The coaching staff was like, "Do you want to come on the ice?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So that was definitely like the coolest one in that sense.
Yeah.
Best one that I saw live that was like just kind of fun or anything like that was Danny Heatley during the 2004-05 lockout. He played in the World Championship. He did an exhibition game against the U.S. Like obviously Team Canada, but at the Metro Center. So he was probably the best athlete I've ever seen live at the time. I mean, might have dumped a 40 into himself before the game. Who knows? But
there's a few years there that he leaves pretty good.
50 and 07.
Yeah.
Is it just me? Is it very Danny Heatley in here?
Oh boy! Anybody else?
Danny. Speaking of, is there a Twitter account that has like dipped in relevance as much as
Danny Elstar?
Yeah,
that's what I mean. 50 and 07.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was like a rib on how Danny Heatley wasn't relevant, and now the Twitter account is not relevant. It's actually kind of funny how that happened. I think like I'm going with the masses. You set out the itinerary or the map for the show, and I thought about this question, and I'm going back.
Oh, you read
it? I did read
it. Okay, cool.
So. I did go back to this question, but I'm kind of going back to Sidney Crosby again. He was so dominant, and I don't know if Jeremy could say this. I guess I'm the only Nova Scotian here. I had the chance to see Sidney Crosby in Midget, and I was very disappointed the one game I saw him play with the Dartmouth Subways, because he didn't even score a goal. He had 6 assists, but he didn't score a goal. And I actually didn't realize this. Kay Brenton, we've recently hired a new, I'm trying to remember her exact title, but she's doing a lot of the running of the business, day-to-day operations.
Director of Business Operations.
Yeah, thank you. And this Courtney Shriver-Richard, who played AUS hockey for St. Mary's, and like a lot of elite female hockey players, she would have had to play with the boys growing up and not realize until our drive up to the draft that she played against Sidney Crosby a number of times. So that's a fun fact for you.
Can I not pick Sidney Crosby? Is that
you're probably encouraged.
Okay, cool.
You've literally seen every athlete alive.
Yeah, now based on your Instagram feed, you've seen just about everyone. So
it's accurate. I'm going to go with someone really off the wall, though. I'm going to go with Christine Sinclair.
Timely choice, right?
I had a chance to interview her a few times when I was working with the Olympic team. And she's a super nice person. I saw her play a few exhibition games. Completely dominant, and even though they're exhibition games, you can tell that she wasn't going all in.
Yeah,
you could tell that she was just a step above everybody else
at like 60%.
Yep,
that's
so. What is Jamie's prediction? That started today, didn't it?
FIFA World Cup
plays Monday, I think.
I don't know how. It didn't seem like she had her best tournament. What has she got for us this time?
Well, I mean, I think their best days are behind her. I think like you have to face that reality. I mean, she's getting older. I think she's going to definitely break the record this tournament.
You think that's
sure.
why she's there?
I don't know.
One of those nostalgia things to break the record?
I have heard that she'll probably play in the next Olympics, too.
So, I mean, like you said,
Team USA
70% is still better than most.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Most. So.
Can I actually throw another one out there? I don't know how anybody didn't mention it, but I saw Nathan McKinnon in his draft here.
Well, I didn't live here, so.
Well, okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
No, Nathan McKinnon was... like as dominant as anybody. Like I remember watching him and Drouin like playing in, it would have been the last year of the Rocket, and I remember going to a game when they were still the Rocket. It was their first game back together in Halifax after the World Juniors, where like McKinnon sat on the bench and Drouin dominated it, and everyone was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And the two of them together were just like the two. I've never seen a more dominant pair of players who just knew where each other were on the ice at all times. Like you talk about, I remember a lot of times that he talked about, like, when Pavel Bure was in Vancouver, that, like, you didn't see the best of Pavel Bure because they didn't have players that were fast enough to keep up with
him. Yeah. It's like the McDavid thing.
Exactly. So, I like, McKinnon and Drouin were that. Like, they were just on their own wavelength when they played in Halifax that year. They were truly, truly, like, two of the best, more dominant athletes I've seen. Like, maybe playing against their own competition that way, but, like,
not to go too long on this topic, but
we can go as long as we want.
Being in Cape Breton, actually, it was a bit different because he wasn't at the age to dominate yet, but Alex Ovechkin played his 17-year-old World Juniors.
That's right.
I was actually a volunteer on that Team Russia. I didn't do a ton, but I did get his autograph, so it was pretty cool that we could say.
Did you frame it?
Sadly, I didn't even know where he is anymore.
I thought you were going to say Shane Bowers, but of course we didn't even
I thought he was going to say Drake Batherson.
That would be a good one.
Right?
I had two as well. I saw Tampa against Montreal in Tampa, so
right.
Stamkos and Price. Mm.
That's not bad.
All right.
Yeah, that's pretty good. If I had to go with another one, I'd probably say Peyton Manning. I saw him play for.
Can we curse on this?
Huh?
Can we curse on this podcast?
I don't give a fuck.
Fuck off.
Not a Peyton Manning fan?
I'm a Tom Brady fan. Fuck off.
No.
Well,
given your age,
you
probably aren't sure what to do in about 4 years when he retires, right?
I follow the New England Patriots. First off, I'm 27 years old.
I've got a good
That's cute.
I know, it's cute. I followed Tom Brady since the year before he beat the Panthers for his Super Bowl there. So, like, I'm not like a fair weather, like, follow him because he, because it was 28-3 for Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like, I followed him for a while.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It's a genuine, I love Tom Brady.
It's not like Seattle, where if Seattle's a hardcore fan, they've been there since 2013.
Yeah.
If they're a fair weather fan, it's 2014. That's about it.
Like the hardcore Raptors fan.
Yeah.
I wanted to, as a sidebar, this is a player I loved when he was at Cape Breton. Great guy, but I'm going to take a small dig at Tyler Hyland. A huge football fan. Loves probably football more as a fan than hockey. And his favorite team is the Patriots. And he once said that he was a Pats fan before everyone else was. And I'm thinking, dude, you're 19 years old. You weren't alive when Drew Bledsoe was their quarterback.
I was just going to say, if you're a true Pats fan, you, like, were for the team when Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback.
I remember that, like, playoffs. That was, like the next couple seasons after was when I was like, oh, yeah, Tom Brady's cool. And then I, like, learned about, like, the whole Drew Bledsoe thing. I'm like, that's fun.
Yeah.
What's a petit déjeuner?
Breakfast.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
What do you mean, what's a... You can speak French. You probably can't see. Your eyes are getting...
I'm quoting Celebrity Jeopardy. What's a petit déjeuner?
Speaking of Jeopardy, is Emma... Did she win every one this week? Does anybody know?
She was up to like 97,000 or something.
But she won all five games?
I think so, yeah.
She? What happened to...
Emma beat her out on Monday.
Buddy, he lost.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't follow it that much, but really?
There was a great meme about that, because I'll give away her occupation. When I tell you the meme, it said it was a picture of James, and it says, I got smart by perusing the library, and then a picture of Emma. I am the library.
Oh. I love it. All right, so before we obviously get to questions about your guys' team, the whole reason you're here, the big picture question for everyone, since 2010, the Maritime Division's won 6 of 9 titles, 3 Memorial Cups. What is it about this division that just the rivalry between all the teams? Like, why is it so special and turning out to be so dominant in the past 9 years?
I'm going to throw out something that might be a little controversial.
We're okay with that.
It's not actually.
Controversy creates guys.
Yeah.
I think Nathan MacKinnon might have said it best during the Memorial Cup when he made the comments being like, we kind of, like, out here, out east, like, we kind of get a bit of a reputation. From, and he said Toronto. I'm not gonna say Toronto, but I think this is kind of like a connotation of this, like, Quebec League and Maritimes.
Just let them do their thing.
Yeah, like, they're there.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of what it is. It's like kind of all like we kind of want to raise each other up. Might be the best way of saying it. Like when I look at on my side, like in the American and social media side, like I like to take digs at St. John, I think to Cape Breton and Bathurst, because I know that we can all raise each other up to a different level.
Right.
And I think that might be the best way of looking at it, like, to raise ourselves up and, like, kind of prove is the right word.
Well, they are proving something. Like, Courteau said to us, when they wanted to come out here, he got laughed at a lot because people didn't think hockey would make it out here. And now it's the strongest division in the league. Like, I don't want to say runs the league, but...
No, it definitely doesn't, because at the end of the day, there's still 12 Quebec teams that... And like, everybody's been really successful as of late. I think, like, when you look at the Quebec League as a whole, obviously, there's 12 Quebec teams versus 6 Maritime
right.
teams. So you couldn't say they run the league, but I think when you look at overall, like, how strong the Maritimes is, it's because I think a lot of times we all raise ourselves to a different level.
Right.
I think, too, it's maybe the strength of the markets, while your bigger markets are the Maritimes. And maybe because the quote-unquote language of hockey is English, if you look at the makeup of teams in the queue, generally speaking, and Maritime teams be primarily Maritimers, and then they'll fill it with Quebecers, and then Quebec teams is vice versa,
mm-hmm.
and it might be easier to integrate the Quebecois and the Maritime teams, as opposed to some of these French markets that don't have the ability to really win with Maritime players. You look at, say, like a Val d'Or, wouldn't have a lot of great Maritime players there over the years. 2007, they had Brad Marchand, and obviously they went to the final. Maybe if they had a couple other guys like Brad Marchand on the team, they win. That's just, I can't say that as fact, but that'd be another theory to put it there.
Right.
Yeah, I think player development, too, is another big factor, too. You look at every sports league in the world, they put teams in markets where they want to produce players. And you're looking at, you look at the players who are going to get drafted this weekend, most of them have never lived without there being a team in the market.
Sure.
That's never happened before. And so I think you're starting to see the Maritimes division finally be rewarded for developing those players now.
Yeah, I don't know. Jeremy, I think, is probably the best person because he probably pays the most attention to this. It seems to me like, and I could be imagining, we don't see as many Quebec players that aren't from big markets in Quebec. Like, it seems like it's a large percentage of Montreal area guys. I know it seems like okay, Brent.
I mean, you make a good point. It's there's really not a lot of players that come out of the actual Quebec City market. Like, you got, like, Alexis Lafreniere, who's, I mean, pretty sure he's from the area here, too, and then you got Joshua Waugh, who's from just over the bridge in Lévis or St. Charles or whatever it's called. But, you know, those are big-name guys, and Lafreniere's doing his thing in Rimouski, and I guess we don't know what Joshua was doing, apparently.
That's the
shouldn't have mentioned his name.
We might get to that in a little bit.
But, no, you're right. You're seeing a lot of players that are, you know, coming out of this league that they're not from the Quebec market. Like, you know, there's so many ambassadors that the Q has right now that they're Maritime kids. You know, Crosby, McKinnon, you know, the list just goes on and on. And it just, you know, just speaks volumes for, like, just, Jamie, you mentioned it, to, like, the player development. And, you know, you just have to really, if the player goes to where he wants to play, and there's so many, I'm going to bring up the draft this year, but so many factors that are coming into play. If a player goes to where he wants to play, you know, he's going to feel motivated to be a better player. And if he wants to be a better player, then he's only going to make the players around him even better, and that's just going to, you know, it's going to help with team success. So, you know, you look at the Quebec teams right now, you know, each Quebec team might have a B level, you know, player, but each Maritime team really has the cupless Cape Breton Screaming Eagles don't really have a bona fide superstar on their team.
Nice but, Trump reference.
A very solid QMJHL Trump reference, which I understand he's actually in town this week.
There are rumors.
Yeah.
Nobody's actually seen him, but there are
he's
rumors.
He's staying at the Chateau Frontenac while little Gilles Courteau is at the Peasant Delta here, like we are. So it just goes to show, like, look at the teams in this division. You know, most of the teams have fairly big name coaches, right? Like, you know, Jim Halton's resume speaks for himself. John Torchetti's got a Stanley Cup ring. It's just markets that players want to play for, and you know, it was brought up about the universal language of hockey being English. You know, if you want to be a superstar, you want to learn both languages, right? Because you never know when you're actually going to have to know both languages, English and French, in life. So it's a good. The Maritimes are a good place to play.
Just lastly, though, we're kind of sad a bit silly here because let's acknowledge the team that just won the President's Cup and Memorial Cup. So you could win from anywhere.
Speak for yourself.
The last
Pat.
Two, really.
Speak for yourself, Pat. You still haven't won nothing.
We haven't. Everyone are in a hat. So
I'll go a different direction with that, though, Pat. You look at the size of the market, and I think the last 2 years in our league, and then obviously across Canada, how that shows and how that looks. I mean, you look at, like, Acme Bathurst, Barrison, beside me here, who's experienced all of that, winning the Mem Cup, and then the next year after that, this year being Rouen winning the Presidents in the Cup as well, like two of the smallest markets.
Saskatoon and Prince Albert getting to the Memorial Cup. It was one of the smaller markets in the Dub.
Yeah.
Exactly.
With all their travel, right?
So I think now more than ever, the size of the market is not necessarily mattering as much. You're going to see the strength really kind of come through how they're developing players, how they're creating an environment, creating an atmosphere around the team that is more positive than anything. And it less matters about the size of the market as opposed to what the market offers.
So it's not
for
necessarily
the
size that matters, right? Is that where we're going?
Well, I mean, that's where you want to go.
it's
your call.
Everybody always says, you know, it's not the size of the boat, right? It's the motion
in
the
ocean.
Right? So, I mean, it's, you know, Bathurst was the smallest market in the CHL in a Memorial Cup. Rouyn Noranda, you know, just watching the Memorial Cup, they always made mention in Sportsnet about, you know, Rouyn Noranda, there's nothing to do there, so they're always together, right? And that just grows a bond with... I mean, it's true.
It's probably not as small a town as you think. But
well,
I get where you're going.
Pat, you would know because you've been there.
I've
never been to Rouyn Noranda.
And Jeremy Boucher, more than anybody should know, if you talk to any player in the QMJHL, allegedly the best poutine in the league is across the street from the Iron Bowl Arena.
Is that right?
Really?
Well...
Looks like somebody's taking a trip there.
Is there a quacking? Is there a duck in the building?
Ducks fly together.
Yeah, ducks fly together. That's a reference to Dobson, who's not here with us, unfortunately. He's
apparently there's a duck here.
Yeah. So, great answers, obviously. Like I've said for a few shows now, we're on the road to Kelowna. It starts this weekend. Why we're all here, it's the draft. So let's get into some draft questions. Jamie, the number one pick. Your thoughts? It was a long season. You guys made the push for the playoffs, but what are you guys doing with the number one pick? Share all the secrets. Tell us what you're doing. Like, we had Richie tell us all the secrets last week, too-ish. So share whatever secrets you get. No, I'm just kidding. Do you have an idea what they're going to do?
I thought I did until about a half hour before this podcast. I will be very shocked if they don't pick first overall. I do know that. Who they pick first overall, I think, is kind of questionable now.
Yeah.
Before this podcast, I would have said Joshua Waugh. Now I don't know. I think when you kind of think about it, and the idea that St. John was floating that pick around, the idea that maybe they wanted Reynolds to begin with is kind of makes more sense. So maybe Reynolds is in play, but at the same time, you could probably move down and get Reynolds. But from a St. John's standpoint, I think the trickiest part about moving down is that the Wildcats are at third, and I do not think they can leave the draft knowing that the Wildcats got a better player than they did. And I think that's kind of the thing that's going to cause some problems for them if they wanted to move down. So I don't think moving down is going to be an option if the Wildcats are still there at three.
Right.
Which probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but at the same time, like that's just the way it is.
It makes perfect sense. Like St. John's like one of Moncton's biggest rivals,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So St. John, you're right. You don't. St. John doesn't want Moncton to get the better player, but I guess when it comes to, you know, rankings and all that and scouts, like St. John could easily have Reynolds ahead of, you know, Waugh or Robidoux. Right, every team's list is different, so it's, you're right. I mean, it's, you know, St. John could pick Reynolds or whomever, and Moncton could, you know, still get Waugh and Robidoux, and, you know, like you said, start the bus if that happens.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, St. John's still a young team. They have holes at every position, and they're going to get a guy who's going to be a huge asset to their core moving forward. So, unless they, you know, completely have a huge disaster tomorrow morning, which I don't think is going to happen. Like they just pass on the pick or something. I think they'll probably be okay with that first overall pick, whoever they end up with.
So 12 hours from the draft, do you think they know who they're taking?
I think so.
I'd say 12 hours and 30 minutes ago they're coming.
I don't know. I really don't know. That's fun to think about.
Fun and scary at the same time. So we'll go to Wildcats quickly. Boucher, update us on the happenings today, other than your poutine eating.
Rumor has it we've acquired Olivier Rodrigue from Drummondville.
And didn't have to give up the third pick.
I was, when I first heard about that, I was a little concerned. But, you know, if that pick would have been included in the deal, I think this weekend would have been of course, with the exception of this podcast, would have been ruined.
Well, we'd have gone home. Like,
yeah,
we'd have packed up and gone home.
Just turned around. But, no, that's huge. I mean, this is, it's an NHL, he's got an NHL contract from your terrible, sucky, awful Edmonton Oilers. So we're looking good here. What was I? I can't think now. First rounder, 2020.
Second in 2019, first in 2020.
Second rounder tomorrow. And
a conditional
second
in 2021.
So, yeah, the conditional one is if Rodriguez plays in Moncton as a 20-year-old. So if he plays pro, then Moncton gets picked back. There's no compensation, so no roster players from Moncton will be going to Drummondville. It's a pretty good deal. I mean, if there was, if there was a previous general manager still in Moncton, I think we probably would see three first rounders included in that deal. Probably every first rounder until 2025. No, this is a very good deal. To think that we might only be getting up a first rounder and a second rounder for a goalie like Rodriguez. Pardon my language here, but I'm fucking excited.
Yeah, the only scary part is Edmonton is such a tire fire. They could use Rodriguez next year because they love to bring guys up way too early.
Edmonton will not.
No, they better not.
But
at least
they have that goalie that wears number 19. Tell them to get a friggin' new number, for Christ's sake.
You know what? At least he'll have some time winning some hockey games before he gets up to Edmonton. But we also moved Capinelli, and that was literally just numbers earlier in the day.
I was driving.
Yeah, and in poutine.
Yeah, I had no poutine by the time, and I had no alcohol in my system.
No, but the guy that's beating you by
last long?
No,
well,
it sure didn't.
He's
making up for lost time.
I have to really take a piss right now. So as soon as I'm done talking, I'm going to the bathroom.
Well, there are five other people here. So.
All right, well, let's move along to the Teton Brier. It was year one of the teardown after the championship. It was a very long year, I can imagine. You guys added some vets and a coin and element. Just talk about year two and what you guys are doing tomorrow.
Yeah, obviously it was a rough year, but also expected, so it kind of made it a little bit easier to deal with.
It's always nice to look up at those banners when you're...
Yeah, exactly. That helps. honestly, tomorrow's going to be, I think it's going to be pretty wild for us, just from what I've been told.
Well, tell us, what secrets do you have?
Right now, we have two first-round picks, and all I'm going to say is that we're not going to have the same amount of first-round picks that we currently.
Dun-dun. Now I really got to get this out before the draft. If you're going to drop that kind of knowledge.
But, the acquisitions today were good. The rumors were going around that Element didn't want to come play.
Right.
And then more rumors that we're going to flip them because of that. But I guess there was a meeting, I think, last night with our coach, our GM, head scout, and basically our coach Mario said to Sly, do what you want, but I want Sean Element in my locker room. So they decided basically we're not going to trade him unless it's a deal we can't refuse.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
And you want that guy.
And I actually just found out today that he's best friends with Matthew DeGagne.
Right.
So that kind of helped.
Couple things along.
Convince him to come and stuff. So.
Nice.
Can I just quickly add in, Brier? Like, I obviously don't follow just Charlottetown. Like, I kind of try to keep an eye on everybody, obviously. And of the teams that have made moves in the last little bit, like today, and then obviously going back to the Christmas trade period as well, like, I think what Sylvain has done, not like toot his horn too much, but like what Sylvain has done in Bathurst has been really good in terms of like, we talk about the Vegas Junior cycle often and like how that works and how he's done a really good job of speeding it up. Like, do you look at the moves they made today? Like, Sean Almond is top six forward in the league. He's a guy that is going to be an impact player for you guys in some form or fashion. The addition of Jeremy Diaz, kind of the same idea. You've got a legitimate quality overage defenseman coming in there who can move the puck and be offensive and jump into play. And someone who's going to make an impact no matter what team he's on, whether it's Bathurst or Ruben Aranda this past year, who admitted that. He's got that kind of player. So I'm really, really impressed with the moves that you guys have made over there. I'm excited to see what you guys do going forward, especially if the number of first-round picks isn't going to be the same come tomorrow.
Yeah, that Diot deal, actually, I really liked it because, like, all we gave up was Matthew Sampson, not to, you know, say anything about him, but he was not always even in our lineup a lot of times,
right.
So it was a pretty good deal for us.
I mean, you look at like, what you got out of him, though, and if you look at, like, if you were to go just based on stat line, like, looking at what you got from Sampson this year, like, you got full value out of a player like that, like, he put up more points. He put, like, I think it was 12 points in 28 games. So you got a quality player out of that deal, and you were able to turn him into a legitimate top four defenseman in this league. So can't complain about that by any means.
No, especially when you're in trying to rebuild and make the locker room better to compete on the ice and make some noise, right? Mr. Pat, talk about, I think you've been to the most drafts, correct? Out of this group?
Yes, this would be my seventh draft, fourth that I've worked. So
right.
I went to three as a fan, and yeah, I think this would be four.
So that's
five.
Seven with the same general manager and coach, correct?
No. So since we're just droning on and on, I can just tell you in full detail. 2008 actually was very interesting because the draft was in... Actually, no, 2006 would have been in PEI.
Right.
Pascal Vincent was in charge of the Eagles then. 2008 was in Cape Breton, and there was a very... The longtime fans of the Q here would know. A very tumultuous...
Hey, Patrick, how much for one of your son's CDs?
Yeah, well, that's... We won't touch that, but the 2008 Pascal Vincent left the Screaming Eagles under interesting circumstances, and he came back to Cape Breton that draft with other teams, so that we were in transition then. 2009 would have been Mariette Roche, who was still in charge at that point, I believe. And but yes, up to your point, until this year, everyone I would have worked, so 2015 on, was Marc-Andre Dumont was in charge as general manager,
right.
But... He is no longer the GM. However, the more things change, the more they stay the same, because a lot of time, I'm not sure how it works everywhere, but I think a lot of time the assistant GM
mm-hmm.
is actually the guy who is usually a head scout and runs the draft. So what was interesting is Marc-Andre Dumont's assistant general manager was Jack Carrier, and he was the assistant GM in Val d'Or. And the Eagles decided, you know, it's not working with Marc-Andre. He was the politically correct term these days. It's relieved of his duties. So after he goes... They have to hire a new GM, and Jack Carrier came in as a GM. I was probably one of the people that was thinking, well, it's going to be interesting to see if Marc-Andre goes somewhere else in the queue. Maybe JC will follow him, and, you know, the same pattern will repeat itself. But instead, JC stays in Cape Breton. So in one respect, things are very different because we have a new GM and a new head coach. But in terms of the actual structure of who we're drafting, it may be more similar than people think.
Well, that just pisses on my question, then, doesn't
it? No, ask it anyway.
It was just what kind of direction are the Eagles going to go with the – You know, the owner made the proclamation to get to the third round last year. He almost got there. It's his first draft, new coach, new GM. Like, what's the direction with the Eagles?
It's a good question that I don't really know the answer to.
Oh, come on.
Well, where would be the fun if I told you?
That's true.
So, usually at the draft, and Breyer talked a bit about this, I think, before, and Aiden talked a bit before, too, teams will do what they call a war room, where all the scouts will just basically get together and they make their kind of final list. And I can't speak to how other teams do it, but in Cape Breton, the way it works is they'll have their war room on Friday night, but the war room is immediately preceded with a full staff meeting. So all of us staff are in the quote-unquote war room before the draft procedure
right.
starts, and then we leave because there's no reason for us to be there. Like, hold me up from doing this podcast.
I mean, well, thank you. I appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing. So Gerard, John, Robert Simon were both speaking there, and Gerard said, you know, he and Jack were on the same page, which is the most important thing.
Right.
So the biggest, and the reason actually I'm kind of hesitant to tell you anything is because I think the team is almost saying they don't know. Because the one thing JC has said is that they're likely to use all their picks tomorrow, which is not really committing to a direction. So this is maybe a situation where there's been so many changes that it's, let's see what we have to start the season, especially you're in a pretty strong division.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see. And we have a lot of picks. We have 18 picks. I mean, traded one for Cole Frazier, and it sounds like most of those picks, if not all, are going to be used. So maybe just BPA all day and go with what you got.
I like it. All right, last but not least, the Islanders, you know, everyone tells me that Holton's great at developing talent, finding talent. You guys are in kind of a mini rebuild, would you call it? Without first round picks, just
where are the Islanders right now? And, you know, Hockey Hat Guy is really going to be into this one, so we'll give him a quick little shout-out. But where are the Islanders without a first-round pick in terms of...
Well, I don't know that the right word is rebuild, and I don't even think the right word is
retool.
Retool was the word that was thrown around a lot in
right.
our area, and I think that's the most accurate description that you could get.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everyone saw the moves, the PO move, the Keith Getson move, the Derek Gentile trade. Like, these weren't necessarily moves that made us worse in the long run of things, you know. And you look at I'll start with the Keith Getson trade because that obviously is the main one everyone points to. It's like,
yeah.
You trade Keith Getson, you get Jordan Meier, you get a second and a third back. You know, that's a step down. Jordan Meier stepped into our lineup and was immediately top six forward and played great, great hockey for us down the stretch. And that's not a slight against Keith Getson. He's one of my favorite people.
It was one of the most even trades. What Getson went to do in Halifax and what...
You could have gone one for one.
Yeah.
I argue that trade was relatively
right.
even. And but ultimately, I think, to get back to your main point, like, in terms of what's happening at the draft tomorrow, I think there's nothing, talking to Jim before, there wasn't anything too imminent on the horizon in terms of any big shocks. I think it was just kind of, he's very transparent in what he talks about. If he tells you something, he's probably going to stick to that. So the one thing that he said before the draft was, we're going to take a goalie at some point with our first four picks, 2 seconds and two thirds. Just because you don't necessarily have a first round pick doesn't necessarily mean you're not getting quality players.
Right.
We still have four picks in the first three rounds. So he said he's been very clear from the beginning. He's going to take a goalie in those first, with one of those first four picks.
I
Matthew Welsh is only here for one more year, right?
I think we could always. I'll bet $20 on the line right now that one of those goalies is Jacob Kubi.
Well, I'm not going to speak to who he's thrown out there, but history might dictate something like that.
Come on now, that's what the show is about. You have to tell secrets. Who is it going to be?
I'm not going to tell any secrets because, honest to God,
I don't know. And
who
you shouldn't,
pick.
Right? Yeah.
If I'm a betting man, I'll go with Mason McDonald, Matthew Welsh, Dakota Lundqvist. Who's
Jacob,
the next goalie?
Jacob Gooby.
So that's
yeah.
a show to Halifax
yeah.
Max. They did
Amen.
A great job.
Yeah.
But that's my guess. Okay?
Right.
I have
yeah.
no idea. The other one he said is he said we're gonna take a defenseman. If Jim is telling us that before the draft, that's where he's leaning. He's leaning on using those picks to say, we're gonna take a goalie, we're gonna take a defenseman. I have full expectation that that's what's gonna happen. He's a very transparent person that way, and he's been great, great to deal with in that sense of telling you exactly, not necessarily exactly what his plans are, but he tells you exactly what he wants you to know
right.
and is comfortable.
So if you're to take a goalie, is that Pelche not ready to be the backup all the time, or is this the future would be Pelche and said goalie you take?
I think it's more planning for the future. At the end
right.
of the day, like you're still looking at Matt Welsh being—he's here one more season. You know, beyond that, you know, you look at a goalie like Isaac Pelche; he's got two more seasons. You look even further down our organizational depth. You look at a goalie like Chad Arsenault, who had a great season with Kensington Wild
mm-hmm.
at the major midget level.
Yeah.
That's another 0-2 goalie. He's got 4 years, really, of eligibility left. Then you add potentially an 0-3 goalie in there as well. You're just adding to that organizational depth and building it up to the point that where you want it to be, especially when you're graduating a top-5 goalie in the queue from your system. You want to basically give yourself as many options as possible to replace that player. And at least, you know, saying this from a marketing standpoint, it's going to be really, really hard to replace a player like Matthew Welsh, and you're going to do the best you can, both on the ice and off the ice, because he's an unreal human being.
Not even from marketing, just anyone you ask around the queue. The puck seems to find Matthew Welsh.
And like I said, and when I say marketing, I mean both on the ice, because he's a tremendous
right.
player, and he is a top-5 goalie in this league, but off the ice as well. He's such a genuinely good dude. Like, what you see is what you get with Welsh. He's multiple stories of him texting us here at the office being like, hey, I have a day off. I want to go to the IWK. Is there any Charlottetown-based kids at the IWK? Can I go visit them? Is there anything we can do?
That's cool.
I like to mention for Aiden, one of the Cape Breton fans at home is like one of the more knowledgeable people that I know who's not involved with the organization that occasionally I'll interview opposing players, and he said the interview with Matt Welsh was one of the best interviews he'd ever redo, which, I mean, obviously, I'm interviewing guys the same way, so that's all credit to him. So.
He's a very well-spoken guy, and him winning the academic award for the league this year is, I think, full credit to that, is that off the ice he is as knowledgeable and as focused and as driven as he is on the ice.
So before we got going on this show, obviously anyone who's on Twitter saw the bomb that dropped. We've talked about it on our show a few times. I pose this question here. Is this a draft or a free agency? With the, I might go this way, I might go this. Like, you know, what are your thoughts on that in terms of, I mean, what we're seeing here coming into this first round, where nobody really knows?
Well,
you know,
when you look at, so if you're watching the Q draft, you're probably a hockey fan, you probably follow the NHL. The NHL is basically the be-all, end-all. You hear a bit about the Russian factor and whatnot, but for the most part, if you want to go to the NHL, that's the top level, you go where you're picked. The thing with the Q is it's a great level of hockey. We all love it. Employs a number of us here at this table. But it's one means of getting to the NHL.
Right.
So to formulate any kind of system that tries to maximize the league in terms of both getting the best players in the league, but also at the same time making sure the league's competitive, it's not easy to do. Anytime anybody goes on Twitter, be it a fan, be it somebody who writes for the league, works for the league, that comes and thinks they have a perfect solution, well, there's probably always five holes you can poke in it. So that's just something to keep in mind. A lot of this might be posturing. We'll see. And we talked about it earlier. We're running around at Bathurst, the last two teams to win the league. So, you know, you can win if you want to win.
Yeah.
Teams
and
won.
It starts in the draft.
You play to win the game.
let's not forget about, like, I mean, obviously we don't have a Halifax contingent here, but, you know, they don't draft the fourth round.
Yeah. Which is why they're not here. Cause...
And Jamie, wasn't it you last year that said that Sam Dubé would be like bona fide all star? They just went up there and dropped the mic.
Maybe.
Yeah. So, I mean, just look, like, they don't have a pick until the fourth round. Let's bring these guys, like, let's bring Halifax kind of into the fold here. Like, they don't have a pick into the fourth round. You have to think that they're going to try to get into at least round two. To get
and they have
something.
Some assets to get there.
Yeah. I mean, with all these NCAA cards, you know, coming into play here, you have to think that they're going to go swing over the fences. Whether if they try to get into an earlier round, that they're going to try to take a shot at one of these big name players who, you know, falls out of the first round.
Or is it the opposite? Because they don't have a lot of picks, they have to be safe and have to pick guys they know are going to play.
There's that too, right? But I mean,
so that would be every team, wouldn't it?
No. I'm just saying because Halifax,
right, for
example, Cape Breton. We talked about this earlier, that we have a lot of picks. And I remember the year we picked Oliver Wahlstrom. I went on Twitter and said, I think this is great. And the reason it was great wasn't because we got Oliver Wahlstrom's rights. It was because we got Oliver Wahlstrom's rights in a year where we had a lot of other picks. Now, if we picked him in the fourth round, and it was a year where we didn't have a first, we didn't have a second, let's say we had a pick in the third, fifth, and seventh. And
right.
Those were only other picks. And we picked Wahlstrom in the fourth round. Well, who's going to fill out your lineup? So that's, you can make those gambles. And Halifax, because of their lack of picks, may be in the worst position to make that kind of a gamble this year.
Right. And yeah, you raise a good point. Briar, you've been pretty quiet there. Speak up. All right, I haven't heard your voice, I think, since the start of the show.
He called you out. You got to speak up now.
Yeah.
Hey, he's the one that has a more cover ring. I don't know if he has a ring.
They didn't give you a ring.
They
didn't give you a ring? He's got a picture with the trophy.
I was only working part time.
Yeah. You have a picture with the trophy.
Oh, yeah. You should get like half a ring.
You're above the rest of us.
Yeah. You got more to say about you yourself than Monkey can ever say about himself.
That's true. So just for each of you guys, your team's draft will be successful if blank happens.
Stay the course.
That's Moncton's? Stay the course?
Stay the course. I mean,
I will agree with that.
You know, it's one of those scenarios. I mean, we had Richie on the show a couple weeks ago. He's made references to, you know, picking the best player available. If that's the case, I mean, they lost their second round pick to that, you know, that Roderick Drill. It's, I mean, to me, no big deal. You know, they still have third overall, still 31st overall. Part of me still thinks they're somehow going to sneak into the second round. You know, it's take a forward person. I think a forward with the third pick, D with the 31st pick, and you're golden. And then just do your thing the rest of the way. Pick, you don't need to take a goaltender.
No,
probably until the sixth or seventh round. You don't need.
If
I mean,
that.
You're going to need a goaltender because you know you got those exhibition games that are strictly rookie games.
Yeah.
Know, except for Halifax, who likes to play veterans and rookies. yeah, like 600 career games between their their group of rookie games. But anyways, yeah, you're probably going to take a rookie, a goaltender at least seventh round. Just to fill out a roster for a rookie game or two. Other than that, just if you want a forward, take the best forward available. If you want a defenseman, take the best defenseman available.
Yeah.
You know, that's the alcohol hitting me right now.
It's not bad. It only took 45 minutes for it to hit you.
That's
impressive.
It is pretty impressive. The fact that I've only started slurring my words about 45 minutes into the show. But yeah, like Richie said. Yeah, last year he looked at their head scout and said, who's the best defenseman available? And their head scout said, Jeremy Berube. And, so they went after him. There could have been,
stick to the board.
Right. Could have been 15 forwards that were, that were ranked higher than Berube. But at that point in the draft, you need a defenseman. So it's stay the course, take the best player available, and, consider the win.
I absolutely 100% agree with that, to be honest with you. Good job.
Thanks,
the cider has not
I think,
affected you at all.
I know. Jeez, I think I need another platoon. Brian, where are you at there? You got three now?
Yeah.
All
right.
Well,
I guess we're stopping.
Where's Brian putting it all?
I know. That's what I said when he walked. I hadn't even met the guy. And then, he walked in the door and I said, at least you got room to put it.
Yeah.
Right?
Briar is like a human live version of Shaggy. You don't necessarily know where he ate it. You don't know where it went.
I know. You look at his picture, you're like, oh, must have been really far away, and then you meet him real often. Nope, he is a little wire. Yep, that's exactly what he is.
Do you have a grade 7 education? Just kidding.
I got my grade 10.
That's all right.
Let's go. As cliche as it is to say, somebody has to say it, you only really know if your draft is successful. 3 or 4, we're not going to turn this into HF boards. Let's redraft the 2018 draft.
You're right. I mean...
So, I think for Gabe Breton, I talked about having a lot of picks last year. It was the same thing. We went in thinking we got a lot of picks, at least the fans and people, like myself who work for the team that have no input on the draft process whatsoever. We walked into it, looked like we had a lot of picks, and then all of a sudden it started and we didn't have a lot of picks, and then halfway through the season, Alex Grover's in St. John, and Ben Allison's in Gatineau, and you're looking around, and so what do we have? Fowler goes on the back end of in the system, and he could be good, and Brady Hunter up front, I think, is a good prospect up front. So we don't necessarily have a ton, but we have the luxury we have a lot of picks this year, so it might be just a matter of the draft will be successful if we just take the picks we have, and it's like a lottery in a lot of ways. You're just stockpiling as many tickets as you can get, and realistically, a lot of it is internally what the teams get compared to what their rankings are. You can't really control. You hope that the guys you want are the guys the other teams don't want. But I think for the Eagles, just having a lot of picks comes at a good time, and hopefully we see some gems on Earth. But again, we won't know that until a few years down the road.
Right.
I'm looking at Jamie. Jamie, go ahead.
All right, I'll go. I'll use a cliche too, like that. I think St. John needs to leave here this weekend with less question marks than they're coming in with their lineup for this next season. I think them leaving on Saturday, not knowing if the first overall pick is going to show up or not, is going to be a huge problem. I think they need to leave here this weekend with guys inked on pen into the lineup card for the season, whether that be through draft or through trades. And I think I do wonder if the Seahawks might try and swing some deals tomorrow. I look at their defense in particular is very young, very thin. I wonder if they might try and move some picks for next year to try and get a defenseman, maybe. That's the other asset that St. John has, is they have quite a few picks for the next year's draft, which doesn't really jive with their core group.
Right.
So it would make sense to move those picks this year. I think St. John just needs to leave here knowing that their lineup is pretty much set for next season.
I think for us to stay in Charlottetown, again, to kind of steal a cliche that was already used, it's already is just kind of stay the course. Like with our current core right now, like we are still at the end of the day rebuilding and trying to restock the cupboards, to steal a Jim Holt quote that he says has said a number of times, restock the cupboards from what was a pretty big emptying at the 16-17 training period. And right now it's about a matter of making the most of our picks and putting enough, you know, enough stuff back in the cupboard, whether it be prospects, whether it be future picks, everything like that, to really kind of put us in a favorable position wherever the season goes. We talked about it earlier and mentioned, it was mentioned how strong the Maritime Division is this year. So it really kind of is a wild card at this point. The whole Eastern Conference in general, like the team like Chicoutimi, the team like Quebec, that have made some really good moves trying to position themselves favorably, that the Eastern Conference is going to be stronger than it was last year.
Yeah.
And if you're kind making really...
Chicoutimi and Sherbrooke
are
going to be the two that...
Well, the West, you had two strong teams last year.
Yeah.
Went to Drummond, and it's probably just going to be Sherbrooke. Really,
yeah.
Sherbrooke will run away with the West. Like, I mean, Victoriaville... Maybe.
I don't know if Victoriaville's in, like Victoriaville had a really good trade. They were probably my favorite trading period last year of all the teams that really made moves. Like, other than being biased, us in Charlottetown, they were probably my favorite trading period because they made some really smart moves. Teams like Olivier Mathieu, there is a, the player, you know, the guy from Quebec last year who had a great second half with them with Victoriaville, and Anthony Poulin, who made the most of his opportunities there. But anyways, to get back to the point, the Eastern Conference is going to be so strong next year that making any aggressive moves right now, I think, might not necessarily be the play. It's just, let's see how this shakes out. Let's see what happens, and then revisit at Christmas time. So as long as we stay the course, I'm going to be happy.
I want to mention this, since Aiden brought up Victoriaville. This is going to be, there's so much to talk about that we've already talked about. This is probably well down there on the list of interesting storylines, but I think it is one to mention. Me and a lot of other experts thought Victoriaville was going to be, for lack of a better term, like flaming hot garbage. And they end up getting, weak conference, but they end up getting home ice. And part of the reason they did that was because at the draft, they obviously, you know, went best player early on, but they drafted some 17-year-olds through the draft, guys that could step in right away. So I'm wondering if there's any teams in the queue now that are looking at what Victoriaville did. You know, maybe Cape Breton because they have more picks, or someone else, maybe Bathurst would be an example, just because the way their lineups fits, and maybe somebody takes that approach. So that's something to watch for more.
Also, I think an aside to kind of build on that when talking about the drafting is how incredibly well they did at the Euro draft. I think you look at how late their picks were, and you see like how well they did, basically with their low picks, because they were so strong that they ended up like doing, they ended up getting two players who were offensive rookies of the year nominees in Igor Serdyuk and Mikhail Ivrelov.
Right. Who just walked in?
Who's this guy?
Quinter!
No.
Who's this guy? All black, everything UFC had. Like, just like, you know this guy.
Right now.
Yeah.
It will be someone that we're made nameless.
Fair enough.
I do not give you permission to put my name on it.
I just yelled at Quinter.
Edit that out in post.
You, Briar?
For us, I think pretty much what everyone else said, just kind of stick to the plan.
Right.
Because where we're in a big rebuild, we really just need to kind of, I guess, trust our scouts' opinions. Just pick who we feel is the best to build a player.
Right.
And then go from there, because I mean, we have needs at every position, basically, for the most part.
Perfect. That's been a lot of fun.
Are we done?
We can go to overtime. You don't have a stick tab like that, right?
No, there's no stick tab this week. I'm looking at this breakfast menu. It looks pretty good. I've been staring at it for like an hour.
Is there such a thing as cereal poutine?
Cereal poutine?
Yeah.
I'd probably put that at like a, I'd go Fruit Loops and then maybe some cornflakes, some milk.
Okay, so before we go any further, you, Mr. Boucher, is a connoisseur of QMJHL radio broadcaster.
Yes.
Very familiar with 10 questions.
Very familiar.
On the McDonald Lager, hey, sorry, Carstar Screamings Hockey.
Was it 970 CJCB?
1270.
1270, sorry about that.
So, I asked, it was posed to Kyle and Lena, he
Why haven't I not won that Dairy Queen contest? Man, I'm commenting like every game.
To somebody that can pick it up at the Walton Street or King.
Well, I'll go to Sydney if it means I'm getting free Dairy Queen, for Christ's sake.
Anyway, the question is posed to Kyle Avelino, who we now pose to Jerry Boucher, is if you're eating a bowl of cereal, but you're not allowed to put milk on it, what are you putting on it? Don't say chocolate milk, like Gabriel Bruce said. You're not allowed to say chocolate milk.
So I'm eating cereal. I'm not allowed to put anything on
it. You can't put milk on it. What are you putting on instead of milk?
Apple juice is pretty good, actually.
Honestly...
And anyone else can answer this, too.
Honestly, if I'm going, like, a bowl of Fruit Loops, I'm going with a yogurt.
Yeah, somebody else said that, too.
Yeah, I'm going, like, a strawberry, like, some fruity yogurt.
Yeah.
A lady that worked with my mom was lactose intolerant, so she couldn't have milk, so she put apple juice on it. It's growing up.
That is disgusting.
Oh, Breyer's got something.
It's nothing option. I eat cereal, like, no milk.
Like, dry
cereal?
Really?
You're a purist. I think Rice Krispies can pretty much do anything. Let's put Sprite on Rice Krispies.
You're an animal. I'm cheating on this answer and saying almond milk.
Okay.
Almond milk? I didn't know that was an option.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Don't
watch.
It's kind of the same around the chocolate milk. You can't really say it, but...
The only answer is you can't say chocolate milk, so...
It's true. That's the one that comes from brown cows, right?
That's true, yeah.
Almond chocolate milk.
All right, well, we'll kick it into overtime real quick.
To the bathroom with my phone.
That's fine. Okay. We do Would You Rathers. So, the first one he already answered. Would you rather go to the bathroom without your phone or go to the gym without headphones?
You're implying a lot, saying that I go to the gym.
That doesn't work out, so.
All right, so I'll jump in on this.
If you go to the gym, would you rather?
So the gym I go to plays incredibly great music, so I'm choosing to go to the gym without my headphones.
Exactly.
Wow.
My opinion.
Yeah. It all depends on where you're working out.
That's true.
Yeah, like the place I go, quality. Oh, Claire Walken, it was just beautiful actor.
The man who will remain nameless brought in.
I don't even have a beard. I don't deserve this.
I'm not much for the gym, but I do enjoy walking as a form of exercise.
Sure.
I know a lot of people who walk or run will listen to headphones, and I don't do that. I just like that kind of hear what's around me. So, no headphones for me.
I can say the gym. Like, I don't go to the gym, but I don't think it would bother me.
I just can't go
there. You don't go to the gym? Really?
No,
he doesn't need to.
Jeremy's trying to do his best to make sure no one being guests today will ever return to the show.
Yeah. I'm just drunk.
That is true too.
I gotta say the gym too. And like it's the bathroom, like you gotta do it, and like you'll suffer through it. But the gym, like I need the music to motivate me to do it.
Like that you need to wear headphones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I listen to headphones, and if I take them off, I'm like, nope. That I don't like hearing things go and people.
Whatever happens, take an energy comedy.
I totally misread all that. I thought you guys were saying, I couldn't live without my phone in the bathroom. You guys are animals. Like, find a gym where they play good music.
That's fair.
I got one here.
Okay.
Just not that.
Not
overtime or anything like that. So, let's do, like, our team's own list of prospects here.
Oh, boy.
I know Charlottetown, you guys don't pick to, like, the second round. But, like, who do you guys think, with your first pick, Briar, you guys get like two, I think, in the first round. But who do you guys think your team, for now, amen. But
you
who guys do
you guys
think your team takes with their first pick, if you follow like listings and rankings and stuff?
Well, I think the storyline, everybody's watching Cape Breton, is to see if we take Riley Kidney, whether it happens or not. I will say, in the war room, one thing I did hear was they actually had a contingency as how the pick would be presented, depending on whether it was a Quebec or Maritime player. So that'll tell you the team.
Is Jacques Carrier going to play a bilingual Carrier, maybe?
It's bilingual. Saying that we don't necessarily know who we're picking yet. But that's a storyline to watch for. It's all about the storylines.
Dozer?
He's the most interesting one.
The draft starts with you, my friend.
I have no idea. I'm just gonna say Reynolds for Max for my own personal entertainment reasons. the wish of Max chaos on the draft floor that Reynolds will bring. So I'm pulling for Reynolds just to
just so everyone can like do St. John off the floor and stuff. Like, I'm really into that.
So,
anyway, but.
So you guys, if you guys take why not first overall, how are you going to react?
Oh, that'd be awesome too. That'd be
okay.
Right.
Okay, good.
Wasn't there somebody had a mock with Bolduc going first?
Yes, it was somebody from. I've never seen him before. I've never. I don't follow him. I've never heard of him before.
Okay.
But yeah, that was.
Is that from McCain's?
I'm not sure.
Scott McCain's mock draft?
who's Trump have going number one?
That's a good question. Trump hasn't.
Well, we can all tweet him and find out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody, a great American.
I know he. He said something earlier, but what's good friend Dave McKnight here had a tweet to
friend of the show.
Friend of the show,
yeah.
Dave McKnight. Have to mention him every week.
Contractually obligated.
He asked QMJHL Trump, does the Trump administration have a plan for all the NCAA bluffs plaguing the league?
Well, the plan is to build the wall.
And the QMJHL Trump administration replied with, education is very important. The QMJHL Trump administration are fully prepared to offer all players a full scholarship to the Eden Hall Academy. Great.
More of an Avon Old Firms guy, person.
Oh, Avon Old Firms.
What about you guys?
The Beavers.
So, for myself, I think I'm the only one that hasn't answered yet. It's virtual all the time. More than anything, I guess, right now, just to kind of blanket it, make it a very political answer. This is my first draft, and this we don't have a pick in the first round. To my knowledge, and to what I've heard, I don't know that I'm necessarily planning on getting there.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to watch the first round as a fan and actually take all this in, especially from Quebec City, because this is an incredible facility. In terms of player, I don't know. Like, there's nobody that I'm looking at, and I'm like, yeah, it'd be really cool. I know the name that everyone's kind of intrigued by and thinks is going to be the big riser tomorrow is Jacob Melanchthon. Yet he falls kind of in
huge fan. Huge fan of him.
Yeah, and that's kind
fan.
Of been the general consensus. So, but at the same time, he's still ranked in and around where we select. So I'll be very curious to see whether that the idea of him rising in the draft and being selected before his ranking in the central scouting ranking comes to fruition or not, but yeah, he's someone. I guess from a fan perspective, I would love to see us get him because he seems to be the kind of player that us drafting at 31, where with our first pick, would be a huge pick for us.
Bold prediction: I think Jacob Melanchthon goes to Bathurst with their second pick in the first round.
If
that's right, Breyer had to correct me earlier there.
Attention.
But that actually wouldn't be a bad selection either. I mean, that's just how fast he's been rising. I mean, just the fact that he, you know, played for Amherst in the playoffs in the Maritime Hockey League and the Fred Page Cup. I mean, he was scoring goals against 20-year-olds. So just say he's proven he's already played against guys, you know, the junior age.
I'm curious to see why that wasn't taken into account as much in his draft ranking. Because you would think you look at a guy like, you look at players like Alex Drover and Dawson Stairs who went back to the Junior A League this year, 16-year-olds and played really, really well and proved themselves to be more than Junior A players. But this is a 15-year-old Melanchthon who had a very, very respectable Junior A season.
Yeah.
And he's ranked, I think it was 29th or 30th. So I'll be very curious to see where he ends up and if that his play at the Junior A level as a 15-year-old comes into play with his overall.
You guys think you take Gooby that early? I know you said earlier that you're not going
to... I honestly have no idea. I don't think it's second round, though. I think if you were to go strictly by central scouting ranking, he and the other three top goalies in the draft are in and around the end of the third round, and they're all kind of interchangeable. There's no... Gooby is like the top-ranked goalie, but then I believe his last name is
Blackburn.
He's two picks after him. And then there's another goalie there who's two picks after him. And then there's another goalie who's a pick after him. So it's like they're really interchangeable. And by the way, none of them will be here.
None of them will be here.
They'll all be at the under-17.
Which is even stupid. I mean, it's
program excellence camp.
it's like the first week where this draft has been like 1 week, like ahead, like
behind.
Yeah. Sorry, this is a liquor talking here. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway.
I am the liquor.
I am. But like it's historically it should have been last weekend. So yeah, you're right. It's like none of these top goalies are going to be here because they're all in, you know, is it Calgary?
Calgary. It's
Calgary.
At Hockey Canada.
Yeah, for Hockey Canada camp here. So, oh shit, the Raptors are.
What is the score?
It's 58-56 Golden State. All
right.
It is good for all those Nova Scotia track and field athletes. That is traditionally, it's usually there's, shout out to Mavs Gillis, who tell me that almost every year there'd be at least one athlete that would fly to get drafted in the Q draft when he's track and field provincials.
Yeah, because the Nova Scotia track and field provincials were last weekend.
Yeah, they were
on
Eastlink. And unfortunately, I was hoping because Eastlink was covering because the draft wasn't that weekend that they would cover the draft, but I guess it's a bit out of their jurisdiction.
So strange.
So at 11, who do you want?
Your job's on the line here, Brian.
Yeah, this is a hot topic for me because I know a few things, but I'm just going to go with Israel Miansko.
Oh, that'd be a very good pick.
I think that's who we took at 11.
I think the sexy pick though might be Nas, because that would be
such
a baller move.
There's
so many question marks in terms of his NCAA eligibility and where he wants to play in the future. I think to go with like the New Brunswick kid and to bring him into your system and make a statement would be like, we're gonna pick this kid with our first pick.
If he wants to go there.
I'm pretty sure you're making a statement by picking anybody based on the rumors that I've heard. Is everybody going NCAA?
That's pretty much it. So, final would you rather question for you guys, and then we'll wrap this thing up.
We really went off topic there. Didn't
yeah,
we?
I know. It's the apple cider that was. I'm just kidding.
I still got like three-quarters of the bottle here.
Would you rather live without internet or live without AC/heat?
AC/heat.
Easily. I definitely agree.
Well, as the marketing,
it's pretty much what we do.
Many marketing people in the room right now, like if I didn't have my cell phone, I'd go nuts and not have a job. So I wouldn't even be able to afford AC if I didn't have my cell phone.
No, and I'm the same way. We're not doing this show without internet.
I think the only way this is a really bad question to ask Canadians, especially, because if you get cold, like at least you can put on more layers of clothing.
That's true.
The answer is going to be the internet regardless.
Yeah.
But you would have to think twice about it if you live, like my brother lives in Atlanta, it gets really warm down there in the summer. So if you live somewhere where it got extremely hot and you didn't have AC, that'd be a bit more tricky, but yeah.
The podcast I take these would you rather questions from, they're in Phoenix, so
okay.
They
kind of
debated
okay,
on AC or, and I'm
okay.
Like, well.
It'd be a bit of a tougher debate there.
Yeah.
But still, everybody's not going to be.
Call Jeremy and
Adam
out for a second here.
Oh, so what?
Call us out?
You can call us out?
Cool.
Well, let's do it.
The sheet you sent us earlier this year had some wrestling questions. I haven't heard one wrestling question yet.
Well, we can get into that if you'd like.
So, anybody pay attention to the Super Showdown today? Or,
there you go.
Where was that taking place?
This is
Saudi Arabia.
Where?
Saudi Arabia.
Where? Is that near Crown Jewel?
I know there's a joke here somewhere, and I'm not getting it.
Anyway.
Not getting it.
Okay, we'll explain it after. Real wrestling fans.
It's a joke.
I followed along to the point that I understand that a not main card wrestler won the Battle Royal.
I know the Undertaker beat Goldberg.
I know that the two of them wanted to kill each other, apparently.
Yes, they did.
Goldberg hitting a brain buster. Undertaker returned in the favor by actually busting Goldberg's brain on the tombstone.
Goldberg gave Undertaker a brain buster?
Yeah, at 52, and he barely got him up and just about dropped him on his head.
Oh,
that's
how
I would expect that.
It wasn't like he was going for the jackhammer. It ended in a brain buster.
Yeah.
It was ugly. And then the tomb, did you guys see the tombstone?
No.
Ooh. It was an actual brain buster.
Well, he's literally the only one that can do that maneuver anymore.
It was an actual brain buster. Like, Goldberg's head ground. It was like, it's the nastiest gif I've seen in wrestling in
like,
a long time.
So
those guys need to hang it up.
Yeah, this bringing people back and the showdown crap, how much is AEW going to stop this and make Vince actually do something with this company?
Hey, first of all, we're all hockey fans here. How would we enjoy the NHL if the NHL had Wayne Gretzky come back and play in the NHL like every 3 months, and every time he played, all the commentators would talk about how even now he's way better than everybody else that's playing in the league. That would make, would you want to watch the NHL? Like, no, it doesn't make any sense. One other thing from the show, how did they fit 50 guys in the ring?
I haven't even seen that part
yet.
Titus O'Neil slid underneath the ring.
Well,
did anybody watch the AEW?
I did see it.
Yeah? How was it?
I thought it was great.
I think it's exactly what the card needed for that first ever card.
Cody
and Dustin is easily the best story told match I've heard in a long time. I've watched in a long time. It was as good as advertised, and I think it was the best example of what those guys can truly bring in the ring because they didn't get a chance to showcase it in WWE. I'm going to stand by my actual answer where right off the get, you said, will this make fans change? I'm like, no. I think it's flat out. Like, nothing's going to change.
No.
And not to steal a quote from CM Punk in the pipe bomb, it's not going to change in Vince McMahon at all.
No, until he's dead.
Whoa,
and that's not a slight against McMahon. He obviously
on this podcast we say that's not a shot at Vince McMahon.
It's not a shot at Vince McMahon. He's gotten to this point in his career doing things his way, and I don't think it's ever going to change.
No.
And I don't think he's not going to let, to steal a quote from Triple H, a pissant company, dictate what he does.
No, for sure.
I think, too, people have to remember, especially the quote-unquote internet wrestling community, there is a difference between customer satisfaction and the number of customers you have.
Uh-huh.
The AEW is seemingly going to have a high customer satisfaction rate, but to actually get the sheer number of viewers the WWE has is another thing altogether. Obviously, AEW is off to a blazing start, and it looks like it's going to be a very great business model. I'm very optimistic. I thought the first show was great, but it's not WWF versus WCW. It's two different animals,
no.
I think.
But
and
the WWE now is turning into WCW, where they're just using the old stars, and they're burying the mid-card talent. Like, there's no reason this company can't go with the Balors and the Rollins.
Sure.
Like, WCW went with the Jerichos and buried that kind of talent. They're exactly following into that model.
There is, but I would argue that WWE has more brand equity than WCW had. Like, WWE as itself, even if people criticize the company and whatnot, WWE itself still has a brand. So,
right.
I mean, I think there's room for both to be successful. So, it's, was it August 31st that All Out, NXT TakeOver UK, and Japan's first show in the UK.
August 31st is like the bank date in the wrestling world, but I just think with Ali, like, they keep talking about the idea of like not a competition but an alternative. And I think that's exactly the way, that's the right mindset for it, because if you try and compete, you're not going to at this point. And it's just sheer volume, like, of dollars, sheer volume of reach, all of that. I think that Ali is on a tremendous path, and I think the TV deal they got with TNT is groundbreaking in so many aspects. I think the one that people aren't talking about enough, and I've said it before in other just casual conversations, is the fact that they're not paying for any of their TV production. That's all being covered by TNT. That's so massive that the WWE didn't even get that till the Attitude Era. So we're talking about right there Monday Night Raw, when 6 years covering their own production costs before anybody stepped in to start paying for it, and All Elite Wrestling got that off the hop, and that's so, so massive that it isn't being talked about nearly enough and how great that TV deal is.
Yeah, maybe we'll see them on TSN in Canada. The real question is, what does Red Rock Wrestling senior official Aiden Northcott think about Earl Hebner wrecking in AEW?
Listen, Earl Hebner has taught me a lot in my career, and watching his matches, I've studied him very, very muchly, I guess. And he is easily the best long two in the league. So
that's most important skill for a wrestler. One of.
Well, one of them. So
I'm taking a bump.
Taking a bump is a little different as a referee because it hurts a lot more than any other move.
Have you gone to wrestling school to take those bumps?
I've had my classes, but not necessarily to take those bumps.
You have some trick. Okay, let's get it. We're all
right, gentlemen.
This podcast.
Yeah.
We've got a case of beer that needs to be opened, so we'll wrap
apologies
this thing up.
Apologies to non-wrestling fans for drawing on.
Yeah, that's fair.
I know Jamie's not a wrestling fan. I don't know if Breyer's not a wrestling fan or he's just really quiet.
I'm going
to
say
Breyer looks like a wrestler.
I'm not
to me.
A big wrestling fan. I watch it every once in a while, but
Breyer's a luchador.
Well, actually, the real luchador was the masked, unnamed guy that came in with the beer because his identity.
Yes, that is very much true. Guys, thanks for joining us on this Maritime Podcast Roundtable, Media Roundtable.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys. It was
fun.
Thank you. And also thanks to Jamie coming again.
Yes.
Let's get drunk.
Roads to Sea Tours, offering a one-of-a-kind experience in the province of New Brunswick. Their coastal tour is a one-of-a-kind tour in Canada, where guests experience the dramatic rise and fall of the world's highest tides in the Bay of Fundy. You can reach them online at roads2c.com or toll-free at 1-877-850-76.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Moncton Wildcast Podcast. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search Moncton Wildcast.